to treat a building!" she panted as she threw herself inside it. She had to drop her stick and hang on to the open door in order not to be jolted straight out again. When she began to get her breath, she realized there was a person standing in front of her, holding the door too. He was a head taller than Sophie, but she could see he was the merest child, only a little older than Martha. And he seemed to be trying to shut the door on her and push her out of the warm, lamp-lit, low-beamed room beyond him, into the night again. "Don't you have the impudence to shut the door on me, my boy?" she said.
"I wasn't going to, but you're keeping the door open," he protested. "What do you want?"
Sophie looked round at what she could see beyond the boy. There were a number of probably wizardly things hanging from the beams— strings of onions, bunches of herbs, and bundles of strange roots. There were also definitely wizardy things like leather books, crooked bottles, and an old brown grinning human skull. On the other side of the boy was a fireplace, with a small fire burning in the grate. It was a much smaller fire than all the smoke outside suggested, but then this was obviously only a back room in the castle. Much more important to Sophie, this fire had reached the glowing rosy stage, with little blue flames dancing on the logs, and placed beside it in the warmest position was a low chair with a cushion on it. Sophie pushed the boy aside and dived for that chair. "Oh, my fortune," she said, and settled herself comfortably in it. It was bliss. The fire warmed her aches and the chair supported her back, and she knew that if anyone wanted to turn her out now, they were going to have to use extreme and violent magic to do it. The boy shut the door. Then he picked up Sophie's stick and politely leaned it against the chair for her. Sophie realized that there was now no sign at all that the castle was moving across the hillside, not even the ghost of a rumble or the tiniest shaking. How odd! "Tell Wizard Howl," she said to the boy, "that this castle's going to come apart round his ears if it travels much further."
"The castle's bespelled to hold together," the boy said, "but I'm afraid Howl's not here just at the moment."
This was good news to Sophie.
"When will he be back?" she asked a little nervously.
"Probably not till tomorrow now," the boy said. "What do you want?"
"Can I help you instead? I'm Howl's apprentice, Michael."
This was better news than ever.
"I'm afraid only the wizard can possibly help me," Sophie said quickly and firmly. It was probably true, too. "I'll wait, if you don't mind."
It was clear Michael did mind. He hovered over her a little helplessly. To make it plain to him that she had no intention of being turned out by a mere boy apprentice, Sophie closed her eyes and pretended to go to sleep.
"Tell him the name's Sophie," she murmured. "Old Sophie," she added, to be on the safe side.
"That will probably mean waiting all night," Michael said.
Since this was exactly what Sophie wanted, she pretended not to hear. In fact, she almost certainly fell into a swift doze. She was so tired from all that walking. After a moment, Michael gave her up and went back to the work he was doing at the workbench where the lamp stood. So, she would have a whole night's shelter, even if it was on slightly false pretenses. Sophie thought drowsily. Since Howl was such a wicked man, it probably served him right to be imposed upon. But she intended to be well away from here by the time Howl came back and raised objections. She looked sleepily and slyly across at the prentice. It rather surprised her to find him such a nice, polite boy. After all, she had forced her way in quite rudely, and Michael had not complained at all. Perhaps Howl kept him in abject servility. But Michael did not look servile. He was a tall, dark boy with a pleasant, open sort of face, and he was most respectably dressed. In fact, If Sophie had not seen him at that moment carefully pouring green fluid out of a crooked flask onto black powder in a bent glass jar, she would have taken him for the son of a prosperous farmer.
How odd.
Still, things were bound to be odd where wizards were concerned, Sophie thought. And this kitchen or workshop was beautifully cosy and very peaceful. Sophie went properly to sleep and snored. She did not wake up when there came a flash and a muted bang from the workbench, followed by a hurriedly bitten-off swear word from Michael. She did not wake when Michael, sucking his burned fingers, put the spell aside for the night and fetched bread and cheese out of the closet. She did not stir when Michael knocked her stick down with a clatter, reaching over her for a log to put on the fire, or when Michael, looking down into Sophie's open mouth, remarked to the fireplace, "She's got all her teeth. She's not the Witch of the Waste, is she?" "I wouldn't have let her come in if she was," the fireplace retorted. Michael shrugged and picked Sophie's stick politely up again. Then he put a log on the fire with equal politeness and went away to bed somewhere overhead. In the middle of the night, Sophie was woken by someone snoring. She jumped upright, rather irritated, to discover that she was the one who had been snoring. It seemed to her that she had only dropped off for a second or so, but Michael seemed to have vanished in those seconds, taking the light with him. No doubt a wizard's apprentice learned to do that kind of thing in his first week, and he had left the fire very low. It was giving out irritating hissings and poppings. A cold draught blew on Sophie's back. Sophie recalled that she was in a wizard's castle, and also with unpleasant distinctness that there was a human skull on a workbench somewhere behind her. She shivered and cranked her stiff old neck around, but there was only darkness behind her. "Let's have a bit more light, shall we?" she said. Her cracked little voice seemed to make no more noise than the crackling of the fire. Sophie was surprised. She had expected it to echo through the vaults of the castle. Still, there was a basket of logs beside her. She stretched out a creaking arm and heaved a log on the fire, which sent a spray of green and blue sparks flying up the chimney. She heaved on a second log and sat back, not without a nervous look or so behind her, where blue-purple light from the fire was dancing over the polished brown bone of the skull. The room was quite small. There was no one in it but Sophie and the skull. "He's got both feet in the grave, and I've only got one," she consoled herself. She turned back to the fire, which was now flaring up into blue and green flames. "Must be salt in that wood," Sophie murmured. She settled herself more comfortably, putting her knobby feet on the fender and her head into a corner of the chair, where she could stare into the coloured flames, and began dreamily considering what she ought to do in the morning. But she was sidetracked a little by imagining a face in the flames. "It would be a thin blue face," she murmured, "very long and thin, with a thin blue nose. But those curly green flames on top are most definitely your hair. Suppose I didn't go until Hal gets back. Wizards can lift spells, I suppose, and those purple flames near the bottom make the mouth." "You have savage teeth, my friend. You have two green tufts of flame for eyebrows." Curiously enough, the only orange flames in the fire were under the green eyebrow flames, just like eyes, and they each had a little purple glint in the middle that Sophie could almost imagine was looking at her, like the pupil of an eye. "On the other hand," Sophie continued, looking into the orange flames, "if the spell was off, I'd have my heart eaten before I could turn around."
"Don't you want your heart eaten?" asked the fire.
It was definitely the fire that spoke. Sophie saw its purple mouth move as the words came. Its voice was nearly as cracked as her own, full of the spitting and whining of burning wood.
"Naturally I don't," Sophie answered. "What are you?"
"A fire demon," answered the purple mouth. There was more wine than spit to its voice as it said, I'm bound to this hearth by contract. I can't move from this spot. Then its voice became brisk and crackling. And what are you? It asked. I can see you're under a spell. This roused Sophie from her dreamlike state. You see, she exclaimed. Can you take the spell off? There was a poppling, blazing silence, while the orange eyes and the demon's wavering blue face travelled up and down Sophie. It's a strong spell, it said at length. It feels like one of the Witch of the Wastes to me. It is, said Sophie. But it seems more than that, crackled the demon. I detect two layers, and of course you won't be able to tell anyone about it unless they know already. It gazed at Sophie a moment longer. I shall have to study it, it said. How long will that take? Sophie asked. It may take a while, said the demon, and it added in a soft, persuasive flicker, How about making a bargain with me? I'll break your spell if you agree to break this contract I'm under. Sophie looked warily at the demon's thin blue face. It had a distinctly cunning look as it made this proposal. Everything she had read showed the extreme danger of making a bargain with a demon, and there was no doubt that this one did look extraordinarily evil. Those long purple teeth. Are you sure you're being quite honest? She said. Not completely, admitted the demon. But do you want to stay like that till you die? That spell has shortened your life by about 60 years, if I am any judge of such things. This was a nasty thought, and one which Sophie had tried not to think about up to now. It made quite a difference. This contract you're under, she said, it's with Wizard Howl, is it? Of course, said the demon. Its voice took on a bit of a whine again. I'm fastened to this hearth and I can't stir so much as a foot away. I'm forced to do most of the magic around here. I have to maintain the castle and keep it moving and do all the special effects that scare people off, as well as anything else Howl wants. Howl's quite heartless, you know. Sophie did not need telling that Howl was heartless. On the other hand, the demon was probably quite as wicked. Don't you get anything out of this contract at all? She said. I wouldn't have entered into it if I didn't, said the demon, flickering sadly. But I wouldn't have done if I'd known what it would be like. I'm being exploited. In spite of her caution, Sophie felt a good deal of sympathy for the demon. She thought of herself making hats for Fanny while Fanny went gadding. All right, she said. What are the terms of the contract? How do I break it? An eager purple grin spread across the demon's blue face. You agree to a bargain. If you agree to break the spell on me, Sophie said, with a brave sense of saying something fatal. Done! Cried the demon, his long face leaping gleefully up the chimney. I'll break your spell the very instant you break my contract.
Then tell me how I break your contract, Sophie said.
The orange eyes glinted at her and looked away. I can't. Part of the contract is that neither the wizard nor I can say what the main clause is. Sophie saw that she'd been tricked. She opened her mouth to tell the demon that it could sit in the fireplace until doomsday in that case. The demon realized she was going to.
Don't be hasty, it crackled. You can find out what it is if you watch and listen carefully. I implore you to try. The contract isn't doing either of us any good in the long run, and I do keep my word. The fact that I'm stuck here shows that I keep it.
It was in earnest, leaping about on its logs in an agitated way.
Sophie again felt a great deal of sympathy. "But if I'm to watch and listen, that means I have to stay here in Howl's Castle," she objected.
"Only about a month. Remember, I have to study your spell too," the demon pleaded.
"But what possible excuse can I give for doing that?" Sophie asked.
"We'll think of one. Howl's pretty useless at most things." "In fact," the demon said, venomously hissing, "he's too wrapped up in himself to see beyond his nose half the time. We can deceive him as long as you'll agree to stay."
"Very well," Sophie said. "I'll stay. Now find an excuse." She settled herself comfortably in the chair while the demon thought. It thought aloud, in a little crackling, flickering murmur, which reminded Sophie rather of the way she had talked to her stick when she walked here, and it blazed while it thought with such a glad and powerful roaring that she dozed again. She thought the demon did make a few suggestions. She remembered shaking her head to the notion that she should pretend to be Howl's long-lost great-aunt, and to one or two other ones even more far-fetched, but she did not remember very clearly. The demon at length fell to singing a gentle, flickering little song. It was not in any language Sophie knew, or she thought not, until she distinctly heard the word saucepan in it several times, and it was very sleepy-sounding. Sophie fell into a deep sleep, with a slight suspicion that she was being bewitched now, as well as beguiled. But it did not bother her particularly. She would be free of the spell soon. Chapter 4, in which Sophie discovers several strange things. When Sophie woke up, daylight was streaming across her. Since Sophie remembered no windows at all in the castle, her first notion was that she had fallen asleep trimming hats and dreamed of leaving home. The fire in front of her had sunk to rosy charcoal and white ash, which convinced her that she had certainly dreamed there was a fire demon. But her very first movements told her that there were some things she had not dreamed. There were sharp cracks from all over her body. "Oh!" she exclaimed. "I ache all over!" The voice that exclaimed was a weak, cracked piping. She put her knobby hands to her face and felt wrinkles. At that, she discovered she had been in a state of shock all yesterday. She was very angry indeed with the Witch of the Waste for doing this to her. Hugely, enormously angry. "Sailing into shops and turning people old," she exclaimed. "Oh, what I won't do to her!" Her anger made her jump up in a salvo of cracks and creaks and hobble over to the unexpected window. It was above the workbench. To her utter astonishment, the view from it was a view of a dockside town. She could see a sloping, unpaved street, lined with small, rather poor-looking houses, and masts sticking up beyond the roofs. Beyond the masts, she caught a glimmer of the sea, which was something she had never seen in her life before. "Wherever am I?" Sophie asked the scull standing on the bench. "I don't expect you to answer that, my friend," she added hastily, remembering this was a wizard's castle. And she turned round to take a look at the room. It was quite a small room, with heavy black beams in the ceiling. By daylight it was amazingly dirty. The stones of the floor were stained and greasy, ash was piled within the fender, and cobwebs hung in dusty droops from the beams. There was a layer of dust on the skull. Sophie absently wiped it off as she went to peer into the sink beside the workbench. She shuddered at the pink and grey slime in it, and the white slime dripping from the pump above it. Howl obviously did not care what squalor his servants lived in. The rest of the castle had to be beyond one or other of the four low black doors around the room. Sophie opened the nearest, in the end wall, beyond the bench. There was a large bathroom beyond it. In some ways, It was a bathroom you might normally find only in a palace, full of luxuries such as an indoor toilet, a shower stall, an immense bath with clawed feet and mirrors on every wall. But it was even dirtier than the other room. Sophie winced from the toilet, flinched at the colour of the bath, recoiled from green weed growing in the shower, and quite easily avoided looking at her shrivelled shape in the mirrors, because the glass was plastered with blobs and runnels of nameless substances. The nameless substances themselves were crowded onto a very large shelf over the bath. They were in jars, boxes, tubes, and hundreds of tattered brown packets and paper bags. The biggest jar had a name. It was called Drying Power, in crooked letters. Sophie was not sure whether there should be a D in that or not. She picked up a packet at random. It had skin scrawled on it, and she put it back hurriedly. Another jar said eyes in the same scrawl. A tube stated for decay. It seems to work too, Sophie murmured, looking into the wash basin with a shiver. Water ran into the basin when she turned a blue-green knob that might have been brass and washed some of the decay away. Sophie rinsed her hands and face in the water without touching the basin, but she did not have the courage to use drying power. She dried the water with her skirt and then set off to the next black door. That one opened onto a flight of rickety wooden stairs. Sophie heard someone move up there and shut the door hurriedly. It seemed only to lead to a sort of loft anyway. She hobbled to the next door. By now she was moving quite easily. She was a hale old woman, as she had discovered yesterday. The third door opened onto a pokey backyard with high brick walls. It contained a big stack of logs and higgledy-piggledy heaps of what seemed to be scrap iron, wheels, buckets, metal sheeting, wire, mounded almost to the tops of the walls. Sophie shut that door too, rather puzzled, because it did not seem to match the castle at all. There was no castle to be seen above the brick walls. They ended at the sky. Sophie could only think that this part was round the side, where the invisible wall had stopped her the night before. She opened the fourth door, and it was just a broom cupboard, with two fine but dusty velvet cloaks hanging on the brooms. Sophie shut it again, slowly. The only other door was in the wall with the window, and that was the door she'd come in by last night. She hobbled over and cautiously opened that. She stood for a moment looking out at a slowly moving view of the hills, watching heather slide past underneath the door, feeling the wind blow her wispy hair, and listening to the rumble and grind of the big black stones as the castle moved. Then she shut the door and went to the window. And there was the seaport town again. It was no picture. A woman had opened a door opposite and was sweeping dust into the street. Behind that house, a greyish canvas sail was going up a mast in brisk jerks, disturbing a flock of seagulls into flying round and round against the glimmering sea. "I don't understand," Sophie told the human skull. Then, because the fire looked almost out, she went and put on a couple of logs and raked away some of the ash. Green flames climbed between the logs, small and curly, and shot up into a long blue face with flaming green hair. "Good morning," said the fire demon. "Don't forget we have a bargain." So none of it was a dream. Sophie was not much given to crying, but she sat in the chair for quite a while, staring at a blurred and sliding fire demon, and did not pay much attention to the sounds of Michael getting up, until she found him standing beside her, looking embarrassed and a little exasperated. "You're still here," he said. "Is something the matter?" Sophie sniffed. "I'm old," she began. But it was just as the witch had said, and the fire demon had guessed. Michael said cheerfully, "Well, it comes to us all in time.
Would you like some breakfast?
Sophie discovered she was a very hale old woman indeed. After only bread and cheese at lunchtime yesterday, she was ravenous.
Yes,
she said. And when Michael went to the closet in the wall, she sprang up and peered over his shoulder to see what there was to eat.
I'm afraid there's only bread and cheese, Michael said rather stiffly.
But there's a whole basket of eggs in there, Sophie said. And isn't that bacon? What about a hot drink as well? Where's your kettle?
There isn't one, Michael said.
Hal's the only one who can cook.
I can cook, said Sophie. Unhook that frying pan and I'll show you.
She reached for the large black pan hanging on the closet wall, in spite of Michael trying to prevent her.
You don't understand, Michael said. It's Calcifer, the fire demon. He won't bend down his head to be cooked on for anyone but Howl.
Sophie turned and looked at the fire demon. He flickered back at her wickedly. I refuse to be exploited, he said.
You mean, Sophie said to Michael, that you have to do without even a hot drink unless Howl's here?
Michael gave an embarrassed nod.
Then you're the one that's being exploited, said Sophie. Give that here.
She wrenched the pan from Michael's resisting fingers, plonked the bacon into it, popped a handy wooden spoon into the egg basket, and marched with the lot to the fireplace.
Now, Calcifer, she said. Let's have no more nonsense. Bend down your head. You can't make me, crackled the fire demon.
Oh, yes, I can,
Sophie crackled back with the ferocity that had often stopped both her sisters in mid-fight.
If you don't, I shall pour water on you, or I shall pick up the tongs and take away both your logs,
she added as she got herself creakingly onto her knees by the hearth. There, she whispered,
or I can go back on our bargain, or tell Howl about it, can't I? Oh, curses, Calcifer spat. Why did you let her in here, Michael?
Sulkily, he bent his blue face forward until all that could be seen of him was a ring of curly green flames dancing on the logs.
Thank you, Sophie said, and slapped the heavy pan onto the green ring, to make sure Calcifer did not suddenly rise up again.
I hope your bacon burns,
Calcifer said, muffled under the pan. Sophie slapped slices of bacon into the pan. It was good and hot. The bacon sizzled, and she had to wrap her skirt round her hand to hold the handle. The door opened, but she did not notice because of the sizzling.
Don't be silly, she told Calcifer. And hold still, because I want to break in the eggs.
Oh, hello, Howl, Michael said, helplessly.
Sophie turned round at that, rather hurriedly. She stared. The tall young fellow in a flamboyant blue and silver suit who had just come in stopped in the act of leaning a guitar in the corner. He brushed the fair hair from his rather curious glass-green eyes and stared back. His long, angular face was perplexed.
"Who on earth are you?" said Howl. "Where have I seen you before?"
"I am a total stranger," Sophie lied firmly.
After all, Howl had only met her long enough to call her a mouse before, so it was almost true. She ought to have been thanking her stars for the lucky escape she'd had then, she supposed, but in fact, her main thought was, good gracious, Wizard Howl is only a child in his 20s, for all his wickedness. It made such a difference to be old, she thought, as she turned the bacon over in the pan, and she would have died rather than let this overdressed boy know she was the girl he had pitied on May Day. Hearts and souls did not enter into it. Howl was not going to know.
"She says her name's Sophie," Michael said. "She came last night."
"How did she make Calcifer bend down?" said Howl.
"She bullied me,"
Calcifer said in a piteous, muffled voice from under the sizzling pan.
Not many people can do that, Hal said thoughtfully. He propped his guitar in the corner and came over to the hearth. The smell of hyacinths mixed with the smell of bacon as he shoved Sophie firmly aside.
Calcifer doesn't like anyone but me to cook on him, he said, kneeling down and wrapping one trailing sleeve round his hand to hold the pan. Pass me 2 more slices of bacon and 6 eggs, please. And tell me why you've come here.
Sophie stared at the blue jewel hanging from Hal's ear and passed him egg after egg.
Why I came, young man, she said. It was obvious after what she'd seen at the castle. I came because I'm your new cleaning lady, of course.
Are you indeed? Hal said,
cracking the eggs one-handed and tossing the shells among the logs, where Calcifer seemed to be eating them with a lot of snarling and gobbling.
Who says you are?
I do, said Sophie, and she added piously, I can clean the dirt from this place, even if I can't clean you from your wickedness, young man.
How's not wicked? Michael said.
Yes, I am. Hal contradicted him. You forget just how wicked I'm being at the moment, Michael.
He jerked his chin at Sophie.
If you're so anxious to be of use, my good woman, find some knives and forks and clear the bench.
There were tall stools under the workbench. Michael was pulling them out to sit on and pushing aside all the things on top of it to make room for some knives and forks he had taken from a drawer in the side of it. Sophie went to help him. She had not expected Hal to welcome her, of course, but he had not even so far agreed to let her stay beyond breakfast. Since Michael did not seem to need help, Sophie shuffled over to her stick and put it slowly and showily in the broom cupboard. When that did not seem to attract Hal's attention, she said,
"You can take me on for a month's trial if you like."
Wizard Hal said nothing but, "Plates, please, Michael," and stood up, holding the smoking pan. Calcifer sprang up with a roar of relief and blazed high in the chimney.
Sophie made another attempt to pin the wizard down.
"If I'm going to be cleaning here for the next month," she said, "I'd like to know where the rest of the castle is. I can only find this one room and the bathroom." To her surprise, both Michael and the wizard roared with laughter. It was not until they had almost finished breakfast that Sophie discovered what had made them laugh. Hal was not only hard to pin down. He seemed to dislike answering any questions at all. Sophie gave up asking him and asked Michael instead.
"Tell her," said Hal. "It will stop her pestering."
"There isn't any more of the castle," Michael said, "except what you've seen, and 2 bedrooms upstairs."
"What?" Sophie exclaimed.
Hal and Michael laughed again.
"Hal and Calcifer invented the castle," Michael explained, "and Calcifer keeps it going. The inside of it is really just Hal's old house in Porthaven, which is the only real part."
"But Porthaven's miles down near the sea," Sophie said.
"I call that too bad. What do you mean by having this great ugly castle rushing about the hills and frightening everyone in Market Chipping to death?"
Hal shrugged.
"What an outspoken old woman you are. I've reached that stage in my career when I need to impress everyone with my power and wickedness. I can't have the king thinking well of me, and last year I offended someone very powerful, and I need to keep out of their way."
It seemed a funny way to avoid someone, but Sophie supposed wizards had different standards from ordinary people, and she shortly discovered that the castle had other peculiarities. They had finished eating, and Michael was piling the plates in the slimy sink beside the bench, when there came a loud, hollow knocking at the door. Calcifer blazed up,
"Kingsbury door!"
Hal, who was on his way to the bathroom, went to the door instead. There was a square wooden knob above the door set into the lintel, with a dab of paint on each of its 4 sides. At that moment, there was a green blob on the side that was at the bottom, but Hal turned the knob round so that it had a red blob downward before he opened the door. Outside stood a personage wearing a stiff white wig and a wide hat on top of that. He was clothed in scarlet and purple and gold, and he held up a little staff decorated with ribbons like an infant maypole. He bowed. Scents of cloves and orange blossom blew into the room.
"His Majesty the King presents his compliments and sends payment for 2,000 pair of seven-league boots,"
this person said. Behind him, Sophie had glimpses of a coach waiting in a street full of sumptuous houses, covered with painted carvings, and towers, and spires, and domes beyond that, of a splendour she had barely before imagined. She was sorry it took so little time for the person at the door to hand over a long, silken, chinking purse, and for Hal to take the purse, bow back, and shut the door. Hal turned the square knob back so that the green blob was downward again, and stowed the long purse in his pocket. Sophie saw Michael's eyes follow the purse in an urgent, worried way. Hal went straight to the bathroom then, calling out, "I need hot water in here, Calcifer," and was gone for a long, long time. Sophie could not restrain her curiosity. "Whoever was that at the door?" she asked Michael. "Or do I mean wherever?" "That door gives on Kingsbury," Michael said, "where the king lives. I think that man was the Chancellor's clerk. And," he added worriedly to Calcifer, "I do wish he hadn't given Hal all that money." "Is Hal going to let me stay here?" Sophie asked. "If he is, you'll never pin him down," Michael answered. "He hates being pinned down to anything." Chapter 5, which is far too full of washing. The only thing to do, Sophie decided, was to show Hal that she was an excellent cleaning lady, a real treasure. She tied an old rag round her wispy white hair, she rolled the sleeves up her skinny old arms, and wrapped an old tablecloth from the broom cupboard round her as an apron. It was rather a relief to think there were only four rooms to clean instead of a whole castle. She grabbed up a bucket and besom and got to work.
"What are you doing?"
cried Michael and Calcifer in a horrified chorus.
"Cleaning up," Sophie replied firmly. "The place is a disgrace."
Calcifer said,
"It doesn't need it."
And Michael muttered, "Hal will kick you out." But Sophie ignored them both. Dust flew in clouds. In the midst of it, there came another set of thumps at the door. Calcifer blazed up, calling,
"Port Haven door!"
and gave a great sizzling sneeze which shot purple sparks through the dust clouds. Michael left the workbench and went to the door. Sophie peered through the dust she was raising and saw that this time Michael turned the square knob over the door so that the side with a blue blob of paint on it was downward. Then he opened the door on the street you saw out of the window. A small girl stood there.
"Please, Mr. Fisher," she said, "I've come for that spell for me mum."
"Safety spell for your dad's boat, wasn't it?" Michael said.
"Won't be a moment." He went back to the bench and measured powder from a jar from the shelves into a square of paper. While he was doing it, the little girl peered in at Sophie as curiously as Sophie peered out at her. Michael twisted the paper round the powder and came back, saying,
"Tell her to sprinkle it right along the boat. It'll last out and back, even if there's a storm."
The girl took the paper and passed over a coin.
"Has the sorcerer got a witch working for him too?" she asked.
"No," said Michael.
"Meaning me?" Sophie called. "Oh, yes, my child. I'm the best and cleanest witch in Ingrey."
Michael shut the door, looking exasperated.
"That will be all round Port Haven now. Hal may not like that."
He turned the knob green down again. Sophie cackled to herself, a little quite unrepentant. Probably she had let the besom she was using put ideas into her head. But it might persuade Hal to let her stay if everyone thought she was working for him. It was odd. As a girl, Sophie would have shriveled with embarrassment at the way she was behaving. As an old woman, she didn't mind what she did or said. She found that a great relief. She went noisily over as Michael lifted up a stone in the hearth and hid the little girl's coin under it. "What are you doing?"
"Calcifer and I try to keep a store of money," Michael said rather guiltily. "Hal spends every penny we've got if we don't."
"Feckless spindthrift," Calcifer crackled. "He'll spend the king's money faster than I burn a log. No sense!"
Sophie sprinkled water from the sink to lay the dust, which made Calcifer shrink back against the chimney. Then she swept the floor, all over again. She swept her way toward the door in order to have a look at the square knob above it. The fourth side, which she had not seen used yet, had a blob of black paint on it. Wondering where that led to, Sophie began briskly sweeping the cobwebs off the beams. Michael moaned and Calcifer sneezed again. Hal came out of the bathroom just then in a waft of steamy perfume. He looked marvellously spruce. Even the silver inlets and embroidery on his suit seemed to have become brighter. He took one look and backed into the bathroom again with a blue and silver sleeve protecting his head.
"Stop it, woman," he said. "Leave those poor spiders alone."
"These cobwebs are a disgrace," Sophie declared, fetching them down in bundles.
"Then get them down and leave the spiders," said Hal.
Probably he had a wicked affinity with spiders, Sophie thought.
"They'll only make more webs," she said.
"And kill flies, which is very useful," said Hal. "Keep that broom still while I cross my own room, please."
Sophie leaned on the broom and watched Hal cross the room and pick up his guitar. As he put his hand on the door latch, she said,
"If the red blob leads to Kingsbury and the blue blob goes to Port Haven, where does the black blob take you?"
"What a nosy old woman you are," said Hal. "That leads to my private bolt hole, and you are not being told where it is."
He opened the door onto the wide, moving moorland and the hills.
"When will you be back, Hal?" Michael asked, a little despairingly. Hal pretended not to hear. He said to Sophie, "You're not to kill a single spider while I'm away." And the door slammed behind him. Michael looked meaningly at Calcifer and sighed. Calcifer crackled with malicious laughter. Since nobody explained where Howl had gone, Sophie concluded he was off to hunt young girls again and got down to work with more righteous vigour than ever. She did not dare harm any spiders after what Howl had said, so she banged at the beams with the broom, screaming, "Out, spiders! Out of my way!" Spiders scrambled for their lives every which way, and webs fell in swathes. Then, of course, she had to sweep the floor yet again. After that, she got down on her knees and scrubbed it.
"I wish you'd stop,"
Michael said, sitting on the stairs out of her way. Calcifer, cowering at the back of the grate, muttered,
"I wish I'd never made that bargain with you now."
Sophie scrubbed on vigorously. "You'll be much happier when it's all nice and clean," she said.
"But I'm miserable now," Michael protested.
Hal did not come back again until late that night. By that time, Sophie had swept and scrubbed herself into a state when she could hardly move. She was sitting hunched up in the chair, aching all over. Michael took hold of Hal by a trailing sleeve and towed him over to the bathroom, where Sophie could hear him pouring out complaints in a passionate mutter. Phrases like, "Terrible old Biddy," and "Won't listen to a word," were quite easy to hear, even though Calcifer was roaring,
"Hal, stop her! She's killing us both!" But all Hal said when Michael let go of him was, "Did you kill any spiders?"
"Of course not," Sophie snapped. Her aches made her irritable. "They look at me and run for their lives. What are they? All the girls whose hearts you ate?"
Hal laughed. "No, just simple spiders," he said, and went dreamily away upstairs. Michael sighed. He went into the broom cupboard and hunted until he found an old folding bed, a straw mattress, and some rugs, which he put into the arched space under the stairs.
"You'd better sleep here tonight," he told Sophie.
"Does that mean Hal's going to let me stay?" Sophie asked.
"I don't know," Michael said irritably. "Hal never commits himself to anything. I was here 6 months before he seemed to notice I was living here and made me his apprentice. I just thought a bed would be better than the chair."
"Then thank you very much," Sophie said gratefully.
The bed was indeed more comfortable than a chair, and when Calcifer complained he was hungry in the night, it was an easy matter for Sophie to creak her way out and give him another log. In the days that followed, Sophie cleaned her way remorselessly through the castle. She really enjoyed herself, telling herself she was looking for clues. She washed the window, she cleaned out the oozing sink, and she made Michael clear everything off the workbench and the shelves so that she could scrub them. She had everything out of the cupboards and down from the beams and cleaned those too. The human skull, she fancied, began to look as long-suffering as Michael. It had been moved so often. Then she tacked an old sheet to the beams nearest the fireplace and forced Calcifer to bend his head down while she swept the chimney. Calcifer hated that. He crackled with mean laughter when Sophie discovered that soot had got all over the room and she had to clean it all again. That was Sophie's trouble. She was remorseless, but she lacked method. But there was this method to her remorselessness. She calculated that she could not clean this thoroughly without sooner or later coming across Hal's hidden hoard of girls' souls, or chewed hearts, or else something that explained Calcifer's contract. Up the chimney, guarded by Calcifer, had struck her as a good hiding place. But there was nothing there but quantities of soot, which Sophie stored in bags in the yard. The yard was high on her list of hiding places. Every time Hal came in, Michael and Calcifer complained loudly about Sophie. But Hal did not seem to attend, nor did he seem to notice the cleanliness. And nor did he notice that the food closet became very well stocked with cakes and jam and the occasional lettuce. For, as Michael had prophesied, word had gone round Porthaven. People came to the door to look at Sophie. They called her Mrs. Witch in Porthaven and Madam Sorceress in Kingsbury. Word had gone round the capital too, though the people who came to the Kingsbury door were better dressed than those in Porthaven. No one in either place liked to call on someone so powerful without an excuse. So Sophie was always having to pause in her work to nod and smile and take in a gift, or to get Michael to put up a quick spell for someone. Some of the gifts were nice things, pictures, strings of shells, and useful aprons. Sophie used the aprons daily and hung the shells and pictures round her cubbyhole under the stairs, which soon began to look very homelike indeed. Sophie knew she would miss this when Hal turned her out. She became more and more afraid that he would. She knew he could not go on ignoring her forever. She cleaned the bathroom next. That took her days, because Hal spent so long in it every day before he went out. As soon as he went, leaving it full of steam and scented spells, Sophie moved in. "Now we'll see about that contract," she muttered at the bath. But her main target was, of course, the shelf of packets, jars and tubes. She took every one of them down on the pretext of scrubbing the shelf and spent most of her day carefully going through them to see if the ones labelled skin, eyes and hair were in fact pieces of girl. As far as she could tell, they were all just creams and powders and paint. If they once had been girls, then Sophie thought Howl had used the tube for decay on them and rotted them down the wash basin too thoroughly to recall. But she hoped they were only cosmetics in the packets. She put the things back on the shelf and scrubbed. That night, as she sat aching in the chair, Calcifer grumbled that he had drained one hot spring dry for her. "Where are the hot springs?" Sophie asked. She was curious about everything these days.
"Under the Porthaven marshes, mostly," Calcifer said. "But if you go on like this, I'll have to fetch hot water from the waste. When are you going to stop cleaning and find out how to break my contract?"
"In good time," said Sophie. "How can I get the terms out of Howl if he's never in? Is he always away this much?"
"Only when he's after a lady," Calcifer said.
When the bathroom was clean and gleaming, Sophie scrubbed the stairs and the landing upstairs. Then she moved on into Michael's small front room. Michael, who by this time seemed to be accepting Sophie gloomily as a sort of natural disaster, gave a yell of dismay and pounded upstairs to rescue his most treasured possessions. They were in an old box under his worm-eaten little bed. As he hurried the box protectively away, Sophie glimpsed a blue ribbon and a spun sugar rose in it, on top of what seemed to be letters. "So, Michael has a sweetheart," she said to herself, as she flung the window open. It opened into the street in Porthaven too, and heaved his bedding across the sill to air. Considering how nosy she had lately become, Sophie was rather surprised at herself for not asking Michael who his girl was and how he kept her safe from Howl. She swept such quantities of dust and rubbish from Michael's room that she nearly swamped Calcifer trying to burn it all.
"You'll be the death of me. You're as heartless as Howl,"
Calcifer choked. Only his green hair and a blue piece of his long forehead showed. Michael put his precious box in the drawer of the workbench and locked the drawer. "I wish Howl would listen to us," he said. "Why is this girl taking him so long?" The next day, Sophie tried to start on the backyard, but it was raining in Porthaven that day, driving against the window and pattering in the chimney, making Calcifer hiss with annoyance. The yard was part of the Porthaven house too, so it was pouring out there when Sophie opened the door. She put her apron over her head and rummaged a little, and before she got too wet, she found a bucket of whitewash and a large paintbrush. She took these indoors and set to work on the walls. She found an old stepladder in the broom cupboard, and she whitewashed the ceiling between the beams too. It rained for the next 2 days in Porthaven, though when Howl opened the door with the knob green blob down and stepped out onto the hill, the weather there was sunny, with big cloud shadows racing over the heather faster than the castle could move. Sophie whitewashed her cubbyhole, the stairs, the landing, and Michael's room. "What's happened in here?" Howl asked when he came in on the third day. "It seems much lighter."
"Sophie," Michael said in a voice of doom.
"I should have guessed," Howl said, as he disappeared into the bathroom.
"He noticed," Michael whispered to Calcifer. "The girl must be giving in at last."
It was still drizzling in Porthaven the next day. Sophie tied on her headcloth, rolled up her sleeves and girded on her apron. She collected her besom, her bucket, and her soap, and as soon as Howl was out of the door, she set off like an elderly avenging angel to clean Howl's bedroom. She had left that until last, for fear of what she would find. She had not even dared peep into it. And that was silly, she thought as she hobbled up the stairs. By now it was clear that Calcifer did all the strong magic in the castle, and Michael did all the hack work, while Hal gadded off catching girls and exploiting the other two just as Fanny had exploited her. Sophie had never found Hal particularly frightening. Now she felt nothing but contempt. She arrived on the landing and found Hal standing in the doorway of his bedroom. He was leaning lazily on one hand, completely blocking her way.
"No, you don't," he said quite pleasantly. "I want it dirty, thank you."
Sophie gaped at him.
"Where did you come from? I saw you go out."
"I meant you to," said Howl.
"You'd done your worst with Calcifer and poor Michael. It stood to reason you'd descend on me today. And whatever Calcifer told you, I am a wizard, you know. Didn't you think I could do magic?"
This undermined all Sophie's assumptions. She would have died rather than admit it.
"Everyone knows you're a wizard, young man," she said severely. "But that doesn't alter the fact that your castle is the dirtiest place I've ever been in."
She looked into the room past Howell's dangling blue and silver sleeve. The carpet on the floor was littered like a bird's nest. She glimpsed peeling walls and a shelf full of books, some of them very queer-looking. There was no sign of a pile of gnawed hearts, but those were probably behind or under the huge four-poster bed. Its hangings were grey-white with dust, and they prevented her from seeing what the window looked out onto. Hal swung his sleeve in front of her face.
"Uh-uh. Don't be nosy."
"I'm not being nosy," Sophie protested. "That room..."
"Yes, you are nosy," said Hal. "You're a dreadfully nosy, horribly bossy, appallingly clean old woman. Control yourself. You're victimizing us all."
"But it's a pigsty," said Sophie. "I can't help what I am."
"Yes, you can," said Hal, "and I like my room the way it is. You must admit I have a right to live in a pigsty if I want. Now go downstairs and think of something else to do. Please. I hate quarrelling with people."
There was nothing Sophie could do but hobble away with her bucket clanking by her side. She was a little shaken, and very surprised that Hal had not thrown her out of the castle on the spot. But since he had not, she thought of the next thing that needed doing at once. She opened the door beside the stairs, found the drizzle had almost stopped, and sallied out into the yard, where she began vigorously sorting through piles of dripping rubbish. There was a metallic clash, and Howl appeared again, stumbling slightly in the middle of the large sheet of rusty iron Sophie had been going to move next.
"Not here either," he said. "You are a terror, aren't you? Leave this yard alone. I know just where everything is in it, and I won't be able to find the things I need for my transport spells if you tidy them up."
So there was probably a bundle of souls or a box of chewed hearts somewhere out here, Sophie thought. She felt really thwarted.
"Tidying up is what I'm here for," she shouted at Hal. "Then you must think of a new meaning for your life," Hal said.
For a moment it seemed as if he was going to lose his temper too. His strange pale eyes all but glared at Sophie. But he controlled himself and said,
"Now trot along indoors, you overactive old thing, and find something else to play with before I get angry. I hate getting angry."
Sophie folded her skinny arms. She did not like being glared at by eyes like glass marbles.
"Of course you hate getting angry," she retorted. "You don't like anything unpleasant, do you? You're a slitherer outer. That's what you are. You slither away from anything you don't like."
Hal gave a forced sort of smile.
"Well, now," he said. "Now we both know each other's faults. Now go back into the house. Go on. Back."
He advanced on Sophie, waving her toward the door.
The sleeve on his waving arm caught the edge of the rusty metal, jerked and tore. "Damnation!" said Hal, holding up the trailing blue and silver ends. "Look what you've made me do." "I can mend it," Sophie said. Hal gave her another glassy look.
"There you go again," he said. "How you must